Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton. Very glad you're listening. Our producers are Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and our director at the controls is Henry Frayne. During this hour of the show, we will talk about a very interesting theatrical production, multimedia production, I should say, from Tel Aviv to Ramallah that will be performed tonight, 7 o'clock at Allen Hall, which is 10005 West Gregory Drive in Urbana on the University of Illinois campus. And we have three artists with us. Yuri Lane is described as a human beatbox and actor. And this is the first time we've had a human beatbox on the show, so I think that's pretty special. Also, Sharif Ezzet is a computer visual artist, and he contributes multimedia visuals to the production. And Rachel Haverlock is the writer and director of the presentation. They're with us this morning to talk about From Tel Aviv to Ramallah, which is, we'll let them describe it. Sounds like a very interesting concept, and I think it's better to have them describe it than to have me. But let me just tell you a little bit more about our guest. Yuri Lane, the human beatbox and actor, grew up in San Francisco's Haight-Ashbury neighborhood and began his acting career at age 12. He's an equity actor and has a lot of experience in the theater. And Sharif Ezzet is an Egyptian-American multimedia artist based in San Francisco, and Rachel Haverlock, writer and director, is a professor of Jewish and Diaspora Studies at the University of Illinois, Chicago. And there's much more we could say about our guests, and we'll talk with them more about their background and their work during this hour. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can easily do so. All you have to do is call us around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. And to all of you, good morning.
Good morning.
Hello.
Thanks for being here. Tell us about the production From Tel Aviv to Ramallah. I've read some very interesting reviews. It's been written up in the New York Times, the Washington Post. You've been performing it around the United States, and here you are in Champaign-Urbana. Who wants to start?
From Tel Aviv to Ramallah is a one-man beatbox show. I combine mime acting, beatbox, and dance to take you on a sonic journey into the Middle East. The show is about everyday life. It's the day in the life of Khalid, a Palestinian internet cafe owner, and Amir, an aspiring DJ, and he delivers packages during the day. I go back and forth between both their lives and play 15 different characters, both their family members and friends, and I embody the experience of both these men through the art of of beatbox. Each character has their own soundtrack, their own individual rhythm, melody, or song. And using movement and mime and dance, I take you on this journey in the life of these two gentlemen that are very similar to each other. But there is a checkpoint, and there is a invisible line that separates them. And they live their lives, and at a certain point, they come together at the checkpoint at the end of the show. And the show is high energy. It's funny. It has lots of amazing visuals by my partner, Sharif Ezzet. He provides the visuals. I provide the sound and the acting. And my wife, Rachel Haverlock, she is the writer and director. So we are a team.
Very interesting. I read that this particular production has had its origins in a trip that the two of you made to the Middle East, Israel, and the occupied territories back in 1999. Can you talk about that?
Yes. When I was doing my graduate degree, I began it at Tel Aviv University. And my second year of graduate school, I spent at Birzeit University near the Ramallah area, studying at a Palestinian university. And I got to live in the dorm, sit in the cafes, go out in the city, be with young people, college age or in graduate school, aspiring to careers. And at the same time, I got to see the way in which the conflict impacts that, both in the fact that Israeli students at any moment would be called up to do their military service. That was a constant eruption. And the traumas and difficulties involved with that, also in the sort of fear of what can erupt on their city streets, and in the case of the Palestinian students facing a very difficult future, despite their ambitions, would they be able to finish the degree? Would there be a closure of the university, of their city? What careers could they aspire to? What would they be allowed to do? Even more local questions, would they be able to travel to a family wedding, say in Gaza, if they were living in Ramallah? So, and at the same time, I got to have a lot of fun in the two cities and hear the music and the nightlife and the passion of the people and really witness firsthand the way that contemporary art forms like hip hop offer an outlet for young people under tremendous pressure and tension that these new mediums of computer art, internet cafes, hip-hop, electronic music became this way to vent those emotions. Yuri traveled with me both when I was a student there, and then again we took a trip right before the Second Intifada began in 2000, and we traveled from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem to Ramallah to Birzeit, visiting friends and hosts on both sides of the Green Line. I had been asked a few different times to do something with my experiences of having been a student in the two places, and I never wanted to create an art form that was focused on me as a Western woman. That wasn't the point of it, and that wasn't what I absorbed and what I was exposed to in my time. So traveling with Yuri, at the end of each day, he would play the day back to me. And I would watch Yuri transform his body into the marketplace in Ramallah, into the taxi stand in Jerusalem, into the performance spaces of Tel Aviv. And I saw that how he really absorbed all of these different people and brought with it this sensitivity to sound and movement and to experience. And he's really funny. And I'd be laughing hysterically about the occupation and the Intifada, which, you know, in and of itself is not a funny topic. But humor is a great way to get at this. And also, he was just picking up on the rhythms of the language. And I said, okay, this is the medium to tell the stories of these people with whom I became really close as a student. And so that really was the seed, or the first moment we got the idea to use performance as a way to tell this story, the stories of young people living through this war and this occupation and you know, this time of political uprising.
So you have the Green Line, and you have these parallel lives, Israelis and Palestinians. You see many similarities in youth culture and what they're, you know, what they're aspiring to do and what they hope for their lives.
Tremendous similarities. I mean, to be at a club or cafe in Tel Aviv and hear the music and hear the political debates of young people, even the cadences of the language and the kind of argumentative tone that isn't necessarily argument, but just very vigorous debate. So the sounds and the lifestyles on either side of the Green Line had tremendous parallels. And we always say if From Tel Aviv to Ramallah had a sequel, our two main characters, Khalid and Amir, would likely meet in New York and start a business together, a cafe or a disco, or maybe they would even produce a hip-hop play. But that line is so indelible and so difficult to cross that young people, Israeli and Palestinians, are not seeing each other. Mm-hmm. Both sides, there are very vigorous hip-hop movements and similar divisions, in that some Palestinian rappers use rap and hip-hop for a nationalistic direction. We definitely have the nationalistic rappers and hip-hoppers on the Israeli side, but hip-hop is also becoming a protest medium for both sides. So a lot of the disaffected youth of Israel are really speaking out against the government, against the occupation through hip-hop, bringing people together. Also the kind of frustration about the occupation, as well as the corruption and slowness in the Palestinian Authority, that's also coming out in Palestinian music and hip-hop. So I think, and the similarities of really the precarious nature of dreams on both sides, that people do not know what's coming. More in the case of the Palestinians, their future is more unclear. But in both cases, young people don't know what to expect next year, next month, in 10 years. So it's very difficult. And we take it for granted here, I think, that we can have ambitions and achieve them as long as we follow a certain route. And that's not the case there. So there's a need, a real need for art as this instant medium of expression. During the Oslo years, many Western artists went to the Palestinian West Bank or to Israel to perform. When the Intifada erupted, that stopped effectively. So what I've seen since I've been back during the Intifada is that a whole local native on both sides art is coming up to offer people consolation in the midst of the uncertainty and the chaos.
Well, that's very interesting. You know, I was thinking as you were talking about this that we don't see reflected in the media ordinarily the ordinary lives and aspirations of the people affected in these areas of conflict. I mean, we get the extremes. We get the most dramatic images because that seems to be what the media specializes in. But we don't see the people.
I'd certainly say that we are seeing ideological reflections in the reporting on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It's something we're quite aware of in our play. Sharif's visuals have this kind of gritty texture of almost a newspaper article. And our idea is that this play takes the audience through the headlines and through the newspaper articles into the actual place and daily lives of young people and their friends and family. And I think there's tremendous hunger in the United States and throughout the West to understand what these people are like. Mm-hmm. We've actually done the show in urban areas. I'm thinking particularly of a show we did in Cleveland, and for teenagers that didn't know so much about the topic, and we said young people are dying every day over these invisible lines. And it was a mix, but largely African-American teen audience. And they got it right away. The daily life made them see the similarities between their lives and the lives of Palestinians and Israelis. And there was this identification. I think a lot of the reporting that we see pushes people away. And they think there's a bunch of hot-blooded fanatics over there killing each other over religion and land. But we're not seeing what it's like to live there and what the people are like. So we're very committed in our performance to depicting daily life, to finding those subtle issues that people face, to show the similarities, and also in using hip hop and multimedia in the show, it's also a way for young people, such as those on a college campus, to say, oh my gosh, it seems so remote to me, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, but look, there are these kids in Ramallah, and they're using hip-hop as a way to express themselves, and there in Tel Aviv, there are these big dance clubs, and it also enables a kind of identification with the conflict, and I think creates more sensitive readers of the news in the end.
Very interesting. Let me turn to Sharif and ask you to talk about the visual element of the production. How do you go about doing what you do? How do you add visually to what's going on theatrically and otherwise, sound-wise?
Sure. Well, I started working with Yuri about 4 years ago on another show called Soundtrack City San Francisco, which was sort of a tour through the different neighborhoods of San Francisco through the converging paths of several different characters over the course of a day. And I realized right away that I wanted to do something visually that would not take away from Yuri's physical performance. That was really important to me, to have something that could sit somewhat in the background but tell a parallel narrative, a parallel story, that would complement the rhythms and the actions that Yuri is producing on stage. So immediately I ruled out full motion video. I ruled out color. All the images are still images in black and white, but I built a visual display engine using Macromedia Flash that allows me to change the variables of the display through keyboard commands throughout the show. So I'm actually performing live along with Yuri and mimicking the rhythms that Yuri produces with his mouth through the rhythms of the visuals. The visuals, the still images, are caused to sort of grow and reverberate in response to the rhythms that Yuri produces. So it's a very kinetic show, but You know, it's all based on a rhythmic exploration of this experience of these places. Wow. And in the staging of the show, too, actually, we took this into consideration so that the stage is actually divided between in two sides. Half the show takes place on one side of the stage in Tel Aviv and the other half in Ramallah on the other side of the stage. And there's no physical barrier on the stage. There's an implied barrier which actually begins the show. Yuri says this is a security wall. We show images on both sides. And throughout the show, Yuri is crossing back and forth over that barrier. And there's a transition, a visual and audio transition that accompanies that. But it's not really there. You know, it's a construction that, that the audience participates in through the narrative of the show. And I think that's a really powerful concept, that this border is very much a construction of our collective imaginations, as well as being, very obviously a very prominent physical barrier in Israel and Palestine. But I think that encourages us to think of this barrier and other barriers and other borders as human constructs. You know, they're not they're much more fluid than we often imagine them to be. And hopefully we can use that idea to reimagine the landscape and to reimagine those borders and those identities.
Very interesting. We have a call to talk with. Let's include them. Let me just reintroduce our guest real quick. We were just hearing Sharif Azat. He's a computer visual artist in this production from Tel Aviv to Ramallah. Also, Rachel Haverlock is the writer and director, whose voice you heard a couple of minutes ago. And also, we have Yuri Lane, the human beatbox and actor, who is key to the actual performance as well. And we're talking about the production of Tel Aviv to Ramallah, which will be performed tonight at 7 o'clock at Allen Hall, which is 1005 West Gregory Drive in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. And that's free and open to the public and sponsored by the Illinois Program for Research in Humanities and also co-sponsored by the Program in South Asian and Middle Eastern Studies and the Program for the Study of Jewish Culture and Society. So props to them. We do have a caller waiting and time for others if you'd like to join us around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. Someone in Champaign County, line number one. Good morning.
Hi there. I guess one of the most recently you're discussing the splash file that you have. I assume I probably could have just Googled the title and gotten to some of your visual art. Do you have any of this displayed on the web?
Yeah, actually, Yuri has an excellent website, which which I built, actually. it's yurilane.com, just like it sounds. And there's a video, actually, we just put up a promo video of from Tel Aviv to Ramallah that you can view on the site. There's also a lot of audio and video clips from Yuri's other work that you can view on the site as well.
Excellent. Some people can get a little preview. I wanted to ask about sort of the trade out in San Francisco. I think the Mime Troupe has actually a show tonight. So you have a rich tradition of this kind of theater. But there's also like the Living Newspaper, and your discussion earlier provoked me to ask about how you see your antecedents other than hip-hop. But the other thing is more substantive is, it's a challenge to put into artwork something as tragic as an old man dying at a checkpoint waiting for health care, or a person losing a baby, a woman dying in childbirth because of the rules of you have to wait in line in 3-7 hours and et cetera, which I'm just wondering how you approach conveying that kind of tragedy in the midst of a hip-hop thing, which is, typically a kind of a celebratory and irreverent kind of tradition. And I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for the call.
Well, I'll answer the question about you made a reference to the Mime Troupe. And, of course, I grew up in the Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco in the 70s. So I was exposed to people of all walks of life. And I took in all the sounds of my neighborhood and began to beatbox at the age of probably 7 or 8. And of course, 6th grade, really bad at math. In class, I just wasn't getting the fractions. So I started, and the teacher was like, turn that radio off now. And I knew I had something there. Of course, I didn't get a good grade, but my classmates, they said, hey, he's got a funky beat. And it was a great way of avoiding getting beat up. And, of course, you can't see me, but I don't look like someone that would necessarily bust a beatbox. And I've been beatboxing ever since. Mm-hmm. And my uncle was a mime, and he worked with a very famous improvisation group called The Committee. He studied with Marcel Marceau, and he would come to visit, and he would do really crazy avant-garde mime for us. And I was incredibly inspired by it. So he taught me some moves. I began acting at an early age. But I had this epiphany after college. I was rehearsing for another show, and I started beatboxing and started to move at the same time. And I said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to combine mime, acting and dance, and beatbox to tell a story, to use sound as a narrative, to take you on a journey through the streets of San Francisco, through the streets of Tel Aviv, but with sound. Certain people, they see the world and they paint it. I paint a picture with sound, with beatbox. Everyone has a rhythm. Everyone has a heartbeat. Certain people's beat is faster. And certain people just maybe have it one sound. Maybe they just have that heartbeat. So I have been using beatbox as a narrative. I consider myself a beatbox actor. And I think there's a real new genre of theater. People like to call it hip-hop theater. I try to make hip-hop theater by using the elements of hip-hop, like breakdancing, like beatboxing, like emceeing, but to use that to tell a story. Certain hip-hop theater that you see is about an MC or about a group of breakdancers. I'm using the elements of hip-hop to tell a story. Now, hip-hop is all about taking recycled pieces of music and also taking other art forms and making it into something new. And that's what really got me when I first started listening to hip-hop, because I would listen to hip-hop and hear jazz influence, and I would hear soul and R&B and gospel and funk. And that's what brought me into this world of hip-hop and confusing these two things together. And the other question about the sensitivity of the subject of the Middle East, I think is very important for people to laugh and to enjoy the two cultures, the Palestinian culture and the Israeli culture, because people are having fun and not everyone is incredibly serious. It's a very passionate society. Everyone has a lot to say. It's fast paced. People are drinking lots of coffee. There is lots of dealing going on, but people are having fun and they have dreams and aspirations. Like Khalid, who is this Palestinian internet cafe owner. He wants to create this big business, but it's difficult during the conflict, and it's hard for him to put his business out there. Now, Amir, he's a DJ. He wants to be a superstar DJ. He wants to go to New York. He wants to go to Amsterdam. But he's got to go to work. He's got to deliver packages during the day. And both their lives are very similar. And they are not really interested in the politics, but the politics get in the way. And they meet at the end of the show. I won't give that away.
Okay, sure.
But they are two brothers, a sort of a modern retelling of Isaac and Ishmael. They mm-hmm. are two brothers that are separated by this invisible line, but also by, of course, this barrier, this security fence. And I think it's important for people who see the show that they are similar and they have a lot more things in common than you'd think. Now, the show is told in beatbox, and we're thinking, is he going to get up on stage and just, with a microphone, just beatbox the entire show? No. Now, every character has their own rhythm and their own melody. So I think I should sort of do a little intro
Please.
To the show.
Yeah.
Tel Aviv, to Ramallah, Tel Aviv, to Ramallah, Tel Aviv, to Ramallah. This is a journey, a journey. Tel Aviv, Ramallah. I am Khalid. I am Amir. Shalom. Tel Aviv to Ramallah. Tel Aviv to Ramallah. This is a journey. A journey.
Wow. Yuri Lane, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, the caller also mentioned something about, you know, the appropriateness of hip-hop to address this fairly, you know, serious situation. And one thing I think it's important to mention is that, you know, as Yuri indicated, hip-hop art forms are capable of expressing the full range of human emotions from, you know, celebratory sensation to, you know, frustration and anger. Obviously, you know, we hear some of that in American hip-hop, too. But hope and despair, all of those emotions are able to be expressed very powerfully through the art forms of hip-hop, which I think this show, you know, does a great job of demonstrating, you know, in this fairly new art form.
Right.
And to take up the caller's final question about how we can depict a checkpoint, you know, with the full range of human experience and tragedy, we're very committed in this play to depicting life. A lot of the art and film that comes out of Israel and Palestine focuses somewhere in the plot, there's inevitably a tragic death. And we wanted to invert that a bit and really look at how do people live through this and what is foreclosed and what's possible in life. So the audience does visit a checkpoint at certain points in the show and does see the nature of that and what that means, particularly for our main characters, Khalid and Amir. But by the time we get to that checkpoint, they are not anonymous. The audience is invested in them. Mm-hmm. So we get to that place and we depict it, but very much again and again focus on the aspect of living through it. And in that, I mean, we're not being deceptively hopeful, but in that, you know, we show that the longing of young people to get through this conflict and to live. So these are the drive for living through the conflict, through staying alive, is very strong throughout the show.
We're a little past our midpoint. We're talking about the production of From Tel Aviv to Ramallah. And the performer, Yuri Lane, is with us, the visual artist, computer visuals, Sharif Izzat, and the writer-director, Rachel Haverlock, are with us during this hour of Focus 580. If you want to join our conversation in the time remaining, the number around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-9455. I want to come back to the I'm not sure I'm going to ever understand how you actually do that, but I did want to follow up on what Rachel was just talking about. The idea of exploring culture, you know, and you made the observation that there are very many similarities between the culture of the youth culture, especially hip-hop culture in Israel and in the occupied territories. You know, we had a very interesting conversation a few years ago with the American philosopher Richard Rorty, and he's concerned with human rights. And, you know, when you read his philosophical writings, you know, it's very dense. I have a real hard time understanding any of that stuff because it is so dense. But he says something very, very interesting, which is that the most important people in establishing humanity, human rights, and really peace and the prospects for civilization are the artists and the novelists and the people who are really just showing people each other, you know, so that we can imagine each other as human beings.
I think that art is the space of intersection and collaboration. It's also the imaginative space open to us to envision and revision the spaces of our lives. So it's a wonderful way to refigure and reimagine one's world. We're not presenting a vision of how the conflict could be solved. That would be somewhat presumptuous, and some of the greatest minds in international relations are quite stumped by this one. So we really are working much more in terms of representation of the cultures there that we've visited and had the opportunity to have firsthand knowledge of. But at the same time, we are a Jewish Arab performance team. And this piece in its developed form really reflects our dialogue and our working together. So in a way, this piece, which represents and is really dedicated to the young people who are dying and living in the Israeli conflict, it's also has been our mode of collaboration, of dialogue, of coming together. And since we opened the show in the fall of 2002, we've taken it to theaters and campuses across the country. And this has been a wonderful opportunity for Jews and Arabs and Muslims and Christians and people from all backgrounds to come together to recognize something about themselves in the show and also to open up that dialogue. We're very excited on this campus that the production is also co-sponsored by the Muslim Student Association and the Jewish student organization Hillel. And so we, in a sense, this is our vision of collaboration, of communication, of looking at issues from multiple perspectives, of challenging people to step outside their own frame of reference mm-hmm. to a wider one that includes more perspectives. So in a way, we're not, you know, creating a sunny sky or utopian version of what's going on. We're really representing it in its gritty reality, but at the same time, this medium has been a coming together for us and thereby a coming together of our backgrounds and traditions. Mm. And along the way, I think that we've been bringing a lot of people together through the performances and the talkbacks around the show.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. We were having a conversation with some of the students at Allen Hall last night, and one of the things that we realized in that discussion is that the three of us actually got together working on an earlier show, like I mentioned, Soundtrack City San Francisco. And I think it's interesting that we started this collaboration with a show that was you know, based on the city where we all lived at the time, you know, and then and organically progressed to this show from Tel Aviv to Ramallah, which is about an issue that we all care deeply about, but that the collaboration was already pretty well established mm-hmm. from just having a shared project that we started with mm-hmm. And just building on that momentum.
We do have a new show in Chicago. It's Soundtrack City Chicago, and it's playing at the Viaduct Theater and Western and Belmont. Of course, you can find out about the show through my website, yurilane.com. And it's a show that takes you through the neighborhoods of Chicago. It's about gentrification. It's about the neighborhoods changing rapidly, but how Chicago is rich with music and culture and the rhythms that are specific to Chicago. And we've opened the show, and we've had some great reviews, and we're excited to continue this collaboration of working together as a crew. I wanted to also talk just more about hip-hop and how hip-hop started. It started really in the 70s and in New York, and the arts funding had been cut. So the kids that, you know, were going to, you know, practice their piano, no more trumpet, no more theater, no more dance. So they started doing it on the streets, started doing graffiti art. And beatbox started on the corners. They didn't have an instrument, so someone started, and they started to MC, and beatboxing became the instrumental part of it. And right now, we're living in this time where our funding for the arts are being cut rapidly. And I think that response, hopefully, it will just be like it was in the 70s, that people are going to get back in the streets and begin to use their lips and use their bodies to express themselves artistically. Now, hip-hop is a universal language now. We have MCs in Poland. We've got incredible breakdancers out of Helsinki, Finland. Sharif and I were actually just in Helsinki, Finland at the Herb Festival, which was a dance festival at the Museum of Contemporary Art. We were the spoken word part of the festival. The response from the Finnish audience was incredible. They have a really rich culture in terms of breakdancing, graffiti art. The rap that we heard in Finnish was unbelievable. So the rest of the world has been listening to hip-hop. I think that we can learn a lot from hip-hop from around the world because, as Rachel was saying, it is a reaction a lot to what's happening in their society, a way to protest what's going on in their own neighborhoods, and using this language of hip-hop that everybody understands. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the past couple of years, the level of musicianship and the level of the art of hip-hop has really taken off. And I think American hip-hop community can learn a lot about reacting to an experience through hip hop, and you know we have hip hop in everything on television. We have commercials now. I hear beatbox, which I like, which is good. Mm-hmm. So it gets it out there. But I want more social issues to be brought up, and of course we hear a lot of bling bling and a lot of money and the material things that we all want, but hip-hop, to me, is best when it talks about identity and it talks about the experience and where I come from and who my family is. And this is the story I want to tell through DJing, through beatboxing, through the spoken word of slam poetry now, which has a real hip-hop feeling, and which is great because kids are getting up now and writing stuff down and getting in front of a microphone and speaking their mind through this language of hip-hop. It's also become a big hot topic in academia. People are writing dissertations on hip-hop. And I think that's great.
Yeah.
And I think it's very important that we continue to focus on the identity of hip-hop. It's important that we begin to go back to making people laugh through hip-hop. You know, it's humorous, too. And it's not, you know, I'm the toughest MC. I'm the best beatboxer in the world, which is fine because you got to have bravado. You got to have an ego. But making people laugh is important, too. And hip-hop is funny.
A lot of the hip-hop, you know, culture comes from sampling, you know, and remixing and essentially reusing snippets of found sounds or cultural elements and so forth, which has always been the case with music. I mean, music builds on music.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but now everything is so fast and easy to sample and remix that, of course, well, the technology makes it easy too. But what I was going to ask you is, you're not using any technology except your own body.
Yes, I'm using my nose.
Yeah.
Which is the melody, and then I'm using my lips as the percussive part of it, and then I'm using my diaphragm to generate the breath control, to really use all the things that, my diaphragm, my throat, my nose, my teeth, and it's human. There's no computer chip inside my brain. I don't use any effects during my show. There are lots of sounds that you think that's just not coming out of his mouth. It's impossible. And that's what's great about beatbox, is because it's kind of like magic. You can't see where it's coming from. And hearing beatbox is one thing, but seeing it live is another.
And you're moving while you're doing this.
Yes, right. So it's a real high energy show. I had a gym instructor come up to me and say, "What an amazing workout! And how do you do it? We need to have that sort of have a beatbox movement workout." And I thought that was quite funny, just sort of me get in front of, 15 people and do a little beatbox movement workout. Actually, in one of my shows, I have a gym instructor who takes you on a little bit of a journey through movement and sound. So beatbox is something that you can teach yourself how to do. You can also teach other people how to beatbox. I've taught kids in kindergarten to adults. Mm-hmm. And toddlers love the beatbox because they're just listening to sounds. And third graders love the beatbox. And the older generations, they understand it. You know, you'd think someone who doesn't understand anything about hip-hop, but when you go back to as far back as vaudeville, people were using sound to tell stories. And I think that, you know, when we talk about hip-hop, when we talk about beatbox, it goes back to Cab Calloway. It goes back as far as the oral tradition, back to Africa, where the language of the drum is the way to communicate. And, of course, each language is very different. With English, you know, we hear in the streets of New York, we hear lots of boom, boom, right? But in other countries, the B, the P, that sound that you hear is not in the language. So if you go to different countries, there are different sounds and different beatboxers because they form words in a different way. And I get emails from beatboxers from all over the world, and each beatboxer has their own distinctive sound. Everyone can make a sound that no one else can make. Certain people say, oh, I don't know anything about beatbox. But then I catch them making sounds. They don't have the right word. You know, it was like ksh, or boom, sort of an extension of onomatopoeia, but taking it to another level. So I speak in a rhythmic language, and sometimes Rachel wants me to speak the language of English and not so much the language of beatbox. My mom is a violinist, yeah, and she would come home from a night of Beethoven, and the last thing she wanted to hear was but she now recognizes it as an art form, and she gives me great pointers as a musician, mm-hmm, and I'm learning more and more about music. My sister plays a stand-up bass, so we have a real rich history with music in our family, but I didn't have the music theory down. I had the rhythm down. So I'm still a student of music, and I'm continuing to learn more and more by listening to lots of different types of music, not just hip-hop, jazz, folk, electronic music. I try to listen to everything, to listen to what's going on around you. A lot of people don't listen when they walk around, you know, in a normal day. A lot of people put on their headphones and look straight ahead and read their newspaper. But if you just one day say, okay, I'm just going to listen to the sounds of my neighborhood, walk down the street and take it in, and it's a very different perspective. And I think you can learn a lot about society through listening.
So you're doing this performance called Soundtrack City Chicago in Chicago, and that's airing at the Viaduct Theater, Western and Belmont. What does Chicago sound like?
What does Chicago sound like?
Just do it.
Doors closing. Next stop, Damon. Green line from the south side. Hey, buddy. I'm JoJo. My name is Tiffany. I like to party. I like to dance. Boom, 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 boom. Blishnish, that's not blishla. Blishnish, that's not There's a little sound of Chicago.
Yeah, okay. Well, to see more, you have to see the show, right?
Well, that's right.
Okay. Well, we just have about maybe 6 or 7 minutes left during this hour of Focus 580. If you listening would like to join us in the time remaining, better get in quick, 333-9455. That's around Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, 800-222-9455. And by the way, the website you mentioned, yurilane.com, that's yurilane.com. And I've got it up here on the screen. Very interesting. And Sharif Azat was the designer of that. It's a flash site.
Yeah, it is.
Very nice. Very nice. So you also, I failed to mention that you've been in residence at Unit 1 on the campus of the University of Illinois for the past 3 days, so, and giving workshops, and that's the place where the performance is tonight. I'll mention that again at Allen Hall, 7 o'clock. That's free and open to the public. So Allen Hall on the campus here is 1005 West Gregory Drive. So, you know, if you're intrigued, which I imagine you would be, should be, then you can attend that as well. So where do you go from here, back to Chicago?
Right. We are excited for the performance tonight.
Yes.
We'll be heading back to Chicago, where we're continuing to put on Soundtrack City Chicago at the Viaduct. And it's actually rare that I'm along for the tour. Huh. Usually Yuri and Sharif are traveling across the country. This summer, as was mentioned, they were in Helsinki, Finland, and they take the show to various regional theaters, to campuses. They perform. We are starting, I'm not going to say anything specifically yet, but we're starting to think about our third show. Mm. We now have Soundtrack City, this idea of capturing the urban environment and the way in which all of these different characters compete in the urban space, also meet each other, accommodate themselves, how they're transformed by the encounter. We have Soundtrack Cities for San Francisco, New York, and now Chicago, the brand new show that's really looking at this issue of the competition over urban space as cities are popular again and are changing. But we remain really committed to Tel Aviv to Ramallah because there simply isn't anything like it out there. And I think the hunger to explore this issue remains and to see this treated in a creative way. We were speaking a bit about hip hop, and from a theoretical perspective, exactly as you were saying, that hip-hop really takes pieces of culture, recombines them, recycles them, and combines them with really the zeitgeist or the spirit of the time. That very much, if I may say, also characterizes Sharif's work, who's pulling things from different historical moments, creating visual languages, and taking his individual perspective and his family's history and bringing that together with everything that he sees. Yuri's out there in the world and he, you know, really is the human beatbox, and that he's pulling from the music and the sounds of the streets and recombining it in his body. And then the two of them get up on stage and, you know, and bring this medley together and create a new whole and a larger whole out of these smaller bits. So it's a very dynamic collaboration. The three of us work in sort of parallel realms. I'm working on the writing, Sharif on the visual dimension, Yuri on the sounds and the musical dimension. And then when we come together, it's another bringing together of these different strands of artistic experience and perspective and tying it into a whole. So I think we've got something good. We're going to keep going. We're trying to build up our group a little bit. We've recently found a lighting designer and you know, always looking for new people to contribute, to learn from, to support us. But we're going to keep going with this. We're pioneering the genre.
The show continues to stay relevant, and I think it bridges dialogue. Yeah. And sometimes when we finish the show, we have talkbacks, and we get lots of really just great questions. And a lot of people, it warms them to sometimes Palestinians and Israelis who come to see the show, and when they hear specific sounds or names of streets or a type of ice cream in Ramallah, they get excited because, as we were talking about before, we see headlines. Mm-hmm. We see people screaming and people mourning. But there's also the parts that make people happy and that, you know, Palestine and Israel are two incredible places. And it's important to focus on a daily life, people trying to make their dreams come true. And our dream of bringing these two cultures and two people together, the two brothers together, and we want to continue to do this show for audiences all around the world.
We have one last call. I want to try to include them real quick before we run out of time. Let's do that. Line number one in Urbana. Good morning.
Hi. I have a question for Yuri.
Okay.
You mentioned that bebop is a really good venue for preschoolers, and I was wondering if you had any references for that, because I think you're right that it is a great. They're really into the sound.
Yeah. Well, I've been teaching at different schools, and sound is a great way to learn language. Kindergartners, when I was substitute teaching in San Francisco, I would listen to the kids making sounds and developing language through sound effects. And I think it's a great way to learn how to speak through sound and to listen. And I'm always interested in working with small children, and I have a children's show called Solomon Builds the Temple, and King Solomon speaks the language of the animals, and the kids are a part of the show. I bring them up on stage, and they become the animals, and I communicate in sound with them. It's a lot of fun. Kids are so spontaneous, and they like to make sounds all the time. So I like to get back into I'm always in sort of a childlike state, I guess, by making sounds all the time. But I love to speak to toddlers and to first graders and to nursery school kids and speak the language of beatbox because they understand it.
Well, I'm sorry to say that we're out of time. We're going to have to stop. But I will mention again, 7 o'clock tonight at Allen Hall, you can see a performance of From Tel Aviv to Ramallah. It is free and open to the public. You should feel welcome there. The address, 1005 West Gregory Drive in Urbana. And our guests have been Yuri Lane, whose voice you just heard, Sharif Azat, the computer visual artist who contributes visuals to this presentation, and Rachel Haverlock, who's the writer and director. To all of you, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
And that, by the way, is sponsored by the Illinois Program for the Research in Humanities, so I wanted to get that in as well. Thanks so much.
Thanks.